Zone presents Money at Work, the weekly show that addresses the issues of the day from a financial perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Memory and Brian Bourdon.
Thank you and welcome everyone to this edition of Money at Work here on November 21st. I'm joining you live here from Old Town Alexandria with my partner Steve Memory. Want to remind you that if you want to get messages into the show, you can do so at mail@ovcapital.net. And as we begin today, we're going to take a look at the markets as we normally do, and a few things have been affecting the markets, which we want to talk to Steve about here directly. But right now, the markets are having a pretty good day. The Dow Jones is up over 100 points, about 0.6%. The NASDAQ is up about 42, and the S&P is up almost 14. So we've seen a little bit of a rise, and some of that was attributed early on to some good news regarding higher than expected retail numbers in October, the month of October, and also gas prices that had been on the decline, which of course is, that's a good harbinger as far as inflation goes. And then we had a bit of a pullback yesterday, leading into today, and before today's recovery. And it was on something we had been spending a good bit of time on last week, Steve, which was we were talking about quantitative easing. And you pointed out that probably what was going to happen is something called quantitative tapering, where the purchasing of these bonds by the central bank would not go away, but they'd cut back on them. And that news was not greeted favorably in the domestic markets. But on foreign exchanges, it was greeted as somewhat good news. And I was wondering if you might want to let us know the difference between those two things. Why would it be one thing here and another thing somewhere else?
Absolutely, Brian. Thanks. Just wanted to take care of a couple of housekeeping issues. We are Omnia Vincette Capital Management. We go by OV Capital. We are in the heart of Old Town Alexandria. We are a registered investment advisory firm managed by the Commonwealth of Virginia, operated under their regulations. If you're in the neighborhood, we are at 109 South Fairfax Street. As Brian mentioned, you can always reach us at mail@ovcapital.net. Now, Brian, what you were mentioning beforehand about tapering, yeah, that's something actually the Fed's been talking about for some time. It's been giving hints and nods and a few things here and there saying that, hey, the low interest rate environment is not something that's going to hang around forever. The question, of course, is how do we go ahead and ease ourselves off the sugar high, as we mentioned last week. The Fed has been talking about tapering since about June, and they came out once more and went ahead and indicated that we're likely to see that tapering continue, or excuse me, begin rather, over the next couple of months. As you mentioned, while the domestic market has had a little bit of a difficult time swallowing or trying to figure out exactly how this will affect the equities in particular, we've had about a three-day run, I guess, of declines. Not substantial, but still enough to go ahead and make you sit up and take notice. While that's happened, as you mentioned, internationally, we've seen some increases, particularly over in Canada. And just to kind of get to the fundamental reason why this might occur, when the Fed has an easy money policy, so this QE, 2 QE, whatever, go ahead and throw a number, whereby the Fed has been buying bonds, effectively reducing the interest rates that are here, what in effect we are doing is also we are reducing the value of the dollar. Some have argued that we are artificially reducing the value of our dollar in an effort to make it easier for us to go ahead and pay back our debt. That's one of those things that can be debated. It certainly isn't a policy of the United States or of the Fed, but it certainly has had some decidedly good benefits for the government, having an easier time, if you will, of making the giant interest payments that we have to make on our national debt. But what this policy of keeping a weak dollar results in is products that are overseas that have to be imported are more expensive. So anything we buy from Japan or Germany, or in this particular case in Canada, which is one of our largest trading partners, the Canadian dollar has been almost on a par, if not in some cases a higher relative value than the U.S. dollar. This means that goods and services that are coming from Canada are more expensive. So when we see that the Fed wants to go ahead and end this tapering, that means that we're likely to see the dollar strengthen over some time. And that strengthening of the dollar means that Canadian imports, as well as other imports, are likely to become cheaper. So naturally, the Canadian market would go ahead and love to hear that news and would move up as a result. What we're seeing today, though, is again, we're up about 100 points or so. We have a lot of different things that have been going on, not the least of which has been some job numbers that have come in. Along that line, I was mentioning to you earlier about the idea of gold. We remember at one point in time we heard all sorts of predictions on gold. Where was gold going? There's been a lot of gold buying. You see the late night TV shows, you turn things on and every other commercial is, hey, we buy gold. You know, gold was on everybody's brain. How do you invest in gold? Gold is a good commodity. It's heavily used in industrial production and is also a great hedge against inflation. But a lot of the speculation that became part of the general populace over the past few years really kind of inflated the price of gold. We heard people out there talking about gold going to $20,000 an ounce, and there were all sorts of people out there saying, all kinds of doomsday predictions about what was going to happen. But what we've seen recently is a pullback in gold prices, and one of the things that this strengthening of the U.S. dollar would have when this tapering begins is that we'll see a reduction in the price of gold. That's just another side of the seesaw, if you will. Currently, we're looking at inflation numbers that are pretty darn low, too. So while we have a strengthening dollar, potentially, with quantitative easing, we have inflation rates that are below the Fed 2% target rate, which is to say what the Fed looks at when it tries to go ahead and kind of balance things out, whether an economy is overheating, whether things are starting to go ahead and move too fast. Inflation, unemployment, a couple of these things that the Fed tries to go ahead and manage. The 2% rate seems to be a bit of a target rate for the Fed at this point in time, and that's where they have looked to go ahead and kind of keep things paced. Right now, we're seeing inflation substantially lower than that 2% rate. And what this means is it's another sign to the Fed that they have the ability to go ahead and ease back on those quantitative easing if they want. There's the ability to go ahead and keep it in place, quite frankly. We don't have a circumstance where we're looking at an immediate need to cool down the economy. What we have is the potential for asset bubbles. With easy money, obviously, that money has to go someplace. So that money is currently looks to be going into the equity markets. And that's part of what causes some fluctuation and some variability, some volatility, if you will, in the U.S. market when it surrounds the idea of tapering. Should we go ahead and see a situation where everything pulls back in the marketplace? Should we see a situation where the Fed really significantly drops off? We're likely to see money move out of the marketplace and prices go ahead and see significant volatility, if not wholesale decreases, simply because of the availability of cash in the marketplace.
Now, as we get into today's show, I want to, again, we have one last little piece of housekeeping business from last week was Janet Yellen.
Okay, yeah, Janet Yellen. Actually, Brian, I think we're having a little difficulty with your microphone here. You might want to check some things. Brian just asked me about the confirmation of Janet Yellen. Recently, I guess this morning, we heard the announcement that Janet had received confirmation from the Senate Banking Committee I guess it was about 14 to 8, and it wasn't a party line vote. There were
no,
about,
it was bipartisan all the way.
Yeah, bipartisan. Well, not what you would call, you know, entirely bipartisan. There's still.
Well, it wasn't unanimous. So there, there were a few flies in the ointment, but it still was. It was pretty good. I mean, as far as it seems like everybody wants her, you know, they, at least they don't have any objections to her.
The general consensus is that we're going to go ahead and we'll see confirmation. The vote was 14 to 8. There were three Republicans that crossed the aisle to vote with Democrats. There was one Democrat that crossed and voted with Republicans. The major concern on the dissenters, dealt with this, easy money policy. There are a substantial number of people out there who think that, this, weak dollar, easy money policy of high availability of credit, is causing or is leading to a situation where we're seeing asset bubbles, like I mentioned beforehand. When I say asset bubbles, I mean things that are going into – that money available in the marketplace has to go somewhere. We haven't seen a significant follow-through to the end consumer. We haven't seen a significant amount of hiring. But what we are seeing is an increase in the value of real assets, things like real estate and equities, stock, etc. These manageable securities have seen a fairly steep boom, particularly over the last couple of years. The market went has done, what, 25%, I believe it is, so far this year, and about 13% last year, if I recall correctly. And you know, this is a substantial move, and the question is what are we moving on? Are we moving on earnings? Are we moving on just speculation? You know, what's driving the increase in prices? As we talked about a little bit last week, there is a case for, in many cases, for at higher earnings justifying these higher prices in the equity market, which is a good news for equities if that's the case, because it means that what we're looking at is still room for equity positions to move higher. There are a couple of dissenters out there, most notably Goldman Sachs and I guess this Yale professor named Robert Shiller. They're looking at a situation where the earnings haven't moved quite as substantially based upon their gauge. And so that calls into question as to where do we actually stand with equities. This is something we'll be able to go ahead and get a little bit farther into when we come back. This is Steve Memory along with Brian Bourdon. We're in the heart of Old Town Alexandria. You're listening to Money at Work on Talk Zone Radio, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Welcome back to Money at Work on Talk Zone. Here's Steve Memory and Brian Bourdon.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Monday at Work, Thursday, November 21st edition here from Old Town Alexandria. I'm Brian Bourdon. I'm here with Steve Memory. And before our break, we had been talking about Janet Yellen and her, you know, her what's going to be a subsequent confirmation to her to her position here with the Fed. And I want to continue on that, Steve. I want you to take us through that, like you were at, you know, before the break. And then sure. I want to get into something else that's happened today down in the Senate, and we'll save that for a little bit later. But go ahead with and finish your thoughts on the pending Janet Yellen situation.
Okay, absolutely. And I think I've got an idea about what you might be saving for later. And if I'm right, it actually works in pretty well with the confirmation hearing. Janet Yellen, as we talked about last week, is the Democratic nominee for the Fed chairman. She's going to be taking over from Ben Bernanke, and that will happen in mid-January. We've had a number of indications of what the Fed is planning on doing here in the next few coming months. You know, they make no bones about what they're after. The Fed's not intent, on being secretive, mostly because they're not interested in surprising the marketplace. Fed is an incremental body. They would rather go ahead and move very slowly, almost glacially if possible. And the reason they like to do this is they want to go ahead and not have any outside impact on the economic situation, particularly the markets. Simply because, you know, you don't need the government putting a heavy hand on what's going on. We already are being led by the invisible hand, if you will, if you follow Wealth of Nations. And the Fed tries to go ahead and keep that as much as possible, the guiding force. Now, Yellen just went through the subcommittee. So those of you unfamiliar with Washington, D.C., and I have to remind myself that not everybody, you know, lives 5 miles away from Washington, D.C., and that they don't always know exactly how the process works here. But essentially, what has gone on is that President Obama has nominated Janet Yellen to be his choice to go ahead and chair the Federal Reserve Board. Now, Janet Yellen has been on the board for some time already, so she's not a wild card. This isn't like appointing an ambassador. This is more like going ahead and promoting from within. So she's been on the board. The board members all know her. When the Fed meets, they go and they come to a consensus. And it's been the habit of the Fed, at least for the past, 20, 30 years or so, that they try to generate a consensus report rather than go ahead and come out and say, well, the Fed says this and that's the way it's going to be, and, you know, hang the rest of the group. Oftentimes it's a while before we ever get the Fed notes to be able to dissect what people are actually saying.
You know, you get the Fed notes. How much of that is public relations, and how much of it is actual, you know, is actual fact that you can use? Because, you know, how much of her job is going to be selling things? Because for the last 5 years, Bernanke's been trying to sell recovery. And I'm sure you're familiar with the movie Weekend at Bernie's. And this has been more like Weekend at Bernanke's, where, you know, something's dead and we're trying to pretend that it's alive and vibrant, and it just isn't. We can't put sunglasses and a hat on it. So how much of her job is kind of selling that things are going well versus things are actually going well?
Well, now, careful there, because that's the new normal you're referring to. Okay, so look, it's when we're talking about the Fed notes is different than a Fed statement. The statement that comes out, or any comment that Janet Yellen as Fed chairman, or Ben Bernanke or Alan Greenspan, anything they say when it comes out usually is pretty darn well tempered in most cases. And Bernanke has kept to this. Most of what you hear at an official capacity tends to be pretty much vanilla. Okay, we don't really hear a whole lot coming out of people that's going to go ahead and shake the marketplace. Okay, so when we get the notes that are released, what we're talking about at the notes level is the discussions that took place in the committee before the statement was actually released. And this is where we get to get some insights, because we take a look at what the discussion was. And you can tell from the notes how many people are leaning towards a higher interest rate level, or how many people feel that we need to go ahead and infuse the economy with more cash. And it's because of that that the notes don't come out until months later. So, yeah, to go ahead and answer your question about the sales job, if you will, that's done more with the official Fed report. Or it can be done in a more informal setting when somebody makes public remarks. When we're talking about, oh, yeah, well, we're out of a recession, the economy is improving, look, these are relative terms too. Okay. So we may not be in a situation where the economy is contracting anymore. So we're not in a recessionary environment. You know, the definition of recession is a numerical value. I mean, it's out there. You can calculate it. So when somebody says, hey, we're in a recession, in most cases, yeah, it's because you wrote the formula up on the chalkboard and it came out equals recession. Okay.
Two consecutive quarters of negative growth.
Exactly, exactly. You know, a non-recession, therefore, is when we're not in two consecutive
whatever is not that.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you're talking about a recovering economy is an economy that most recently was in two consecutive quarters of negative growth and now is no longer.
It's not that.
Exactly. So now that doesn't mean that we're going ahead and we're going gangbusters and moving positive. But the fact is you can go ahead and have, you know, a 0.01% growth and you have a recovering economy.
Now everybody seems to be, you know, pretty well sold on Yellen. There's not going to be much trouble confirming her now.
Well, look, there is some, and you don't know exactly how things are going to play out, but, you know, because there are significant dissenters, and there are dissension along the line of, is this easy money policy really the best policy for this country?
But they're limited in what they can do now, as we found out today about stopping this nomination from going through. Harry Reid went to the floor today and he said that brought a bill that says no more filibustering except in the cases of Supreme Court nominees. That would be the only time you'd be able to filibuster. Now, they did this because they've been having trouble getting Obama's appeals court nominees through. They've been filibustered successfully by the Republicans, and this was kind of rammed through today. Now, the Republicans tried to get it put through that even Supreme Court nominees cannot be filibustered, but the Democrats wouldn't go for that. So this was pretty much four Democrats joined the dissenting Republicans on this one. So it wasn't strictly along party lines. There were some people that kind of had to hold their nose on this one, but that does kind of beg the question here, you know, what are you to do now? You've got one less arrow in your quiver.
Well, that's true. The problem, of course, is, as with all politics in D.C., we end up with a what's good for the goose is good for the gander environment. And you know, on the one hand, look, this is the biggest non-issue of the day because, quite frankly, you know, we're not talking about wholesale policy revision. The filibuster, yes, it's been used. Yes, it's been out there. Yes, it brought Ted Cruz to the fore. Even though we're not calling that a filibuster now, just a 21-hour speech. But it's also, you know, the kind of thing that is, you know, look, Janet Yellen will be confirmed. It's not going to take that much to get her confirmed. You're going to get the Republicans you need to join with Democrats to get her confirmation. I think what we're looking at, even on a filibuster type of vote with 61 people to invoke cloture to close things down and get the vote taken, you'd have it. So this is not going to do anything as far as that's concerned. It's a grand gesture. Look, they call this the nuclear option for a reason. And it, not because it has a nuclear effect, but because, as we always kind of felt under the in the Cold War, under the mutually assured destruction kind of idea, is that you can expect that this will be used against you. And that, I think, is really a bad idea from a political standpoint. We're already in a highly partisan environment. It's very difficult to go ahead and get the two sides to work together, not only because, you know, there seems to be a lot of animosity lately and a lot of accusation, but also because, you know, the policies that seem to be put forward seem to leave little room for negotiation.
Well, and it seems to me that over the last few years, especially, that the language in these new rules start out with the words, oh, yeah.
True. Exactly. You know, it's.
Well, I'm gonna. This is what we're gonna do. You think you're gonna do that? And that, like you said, that's hardly a you know, grounds for can't we all just get along bipartisan? What's good for the country is what we're going to do here.
I know. Well, it's like we end up having the Senate sitting there on one side going east side, and then the House comes back out and goes west side. You never know who. Everybody's flashing gang signs.
Yeah, it's like the Jets and the Sharks, only like way worse.
Well, thankfully, they're not dancing yet. We'll see what happens. I don't know. But the point is that, you know, particularly for the Democrats, this is a little bit short-sighted. And now I'll give you, it might be just because it's short-sighted that it actually took place. The Democrats, from a political standpoint, facing a significant challenge, given the difficulty that everybody has had in rolling out, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. We've seen problems with, the website, problems with insurances increasing, problems with, insurances being, coverage being canceled. So we've got premiums, coverage, website issues. This isn't going away anytime soon. And throw all that into the mix with the fact that they went ahead and told you that you were going to have the best of all possible worlds. And then they hit you on top of that with they knew that it wasn't going to be the best of all possible worlds. And you're looking at a situation where the Democrats are decidedly facing a circumstance where they're going to lose seats in the House and likely in the Senate come elections next year.
So this is a situation with this filibuster rule. Basically, you think that this is like the Wizard of Oz when the little dog pulls the curtain back and you see this snake oil salesman from Kansas instead of the big hologram head that you're supposed to be so impressed with. And what they're trying to do is pull the curtain back again and say, no, focus on that great big head.
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, faced with a, we're all sitting here, we're in the middle of the coach and the horses are at full gallop and we look up and the old guy who's supposed to be manning the reins is dead. Oh, by the way, it's 20 feet until you see the cliff. You better pass what you can now. You better get your guys in place now because come election time, if you think it's bad now, you're not going to have them later. So that's part of the idea.
Okay, well, we're gonna pick up with some more information on the other side of the break. There's some other things we want to get to, including what we're looking at in the market these days. And I also want to, and I've made a note here, is getting some questions on gold, you know, as it's come back, but actually buying the precious metal itself. Where does someone go for that? How do they do it? How do they obtain it? And what do they do with it once they get it? So we want to come back with that on the other side of the break. We're going to take about 90 seconds here and give you a chance to decompress, and we'll be back on the other side with Money at Work on TalkZone.com.
And now more of Money at Work on TalkZone.com. Here's Steve Memory and Brian Bourdon.
Thank you, and welcome back to the second half hour of our program, Money at Work, here on TalkZone.com. We're coming to you live from Old Town Alexandria, just a stone's throw across the Potomac, or a silver dollar, as George might do, from Washington, D.C. And again, if you want to get a message to us, you can do so at mail@ovcapital.net. We go through those, and if we have something that that we think is relevant and will be satisfactory for the listening audience, we're going to go ahead and get that on there.
It has to be relevant. You have to make the cut. Is that it?
Well, yeah, if you just, you know, want to call up and complain about Brian, you're not going to get on. So remember that. But before we had gotten into the whole, the filibuster thing and the obfuscation that I think everybody kind of realizes is taking place here, kind of a sleight of hand, you know, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. But, let's move into some of the things that you wanted to talk about today. I know that you've got some things that you want to discuss. And so I wanted you to just open you up and just say, ask you what's on your mind. What do you want to talk about?
Sure. Well, there's, anytime you take a look at the market, one of the wonderful things I love about the market is that, of course, every day there's something new. You know, the puzzle is always different. There's always a change. There's always new information coming out. There's always old information to reject. In any case, what we've looked at today is, in addition to, the confirmation of Janet Yellen in play, Harry Reid. We're also looking at starting to come on to the end of the year, which means that we're evaluating what we're looking at going forward. What is the new year going to look like? Is this going to be in an environment that is beneficial for equities? Is it a circumstance that we all should pack in, take our ball and go home? Do we need to put money in the mattress? Do we need to start making our prepper shelter bigger? Or do we go ahead and mortgage the house and throw everything in the market? Obviously, none of those answers is appropriate. Just to go ahead and clarify. The reason I bring this up, I guess, Goldman Sachs came out with their expectation for what next year is going to look like. The prediction from the group over Goldman Sachs is that we're likely to see the S&P move up to about 1900 by the end of the year. And we're looking at about a 6% gain, roughly, from where we stand right now.
You're talking about the end of 2014.
2014, exactly. So okay. what we're looking at from Goldman is an expectation of about a 6% rate of return equity-wise for next year. This is substantially down from what we've done the past 2 years. As we mentioned earlier, this year we're at around, 25%, I guess. Last year we did roughly 13%, both in the S&P. So we've seen some significant moves in the last 2 years. 3 years ago, different story. We had a virtually flat S&P 500, as I think we came within, 52 basis points? That's 0.52% or 0.52 points,
yeah.
Not basis points, not even percentage points, but actually 0.52 points.
Half a percent would have been nice.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Exactly. On the S&P. So we had essentially a 0% return 3 years ago, followed by 13, followed by 25. The Goldman prediction nets out to about 6%. The Fed model nets out to about just under 6%. They're looking for, I guess, about 1875 or so. And that all that goes to a question of, hey, where are we today, and what are we looking at? And the reason I bring this up is because with the easy money policy that a lot of people are concerned about, in particular, there's a substantial number of Republicans on the Hill who have opposed Janet Yellen. From the standpoint of, hey, there's too much money out there in the marketplace. We need to go ahead and rein this in because we're creating an asset bubble. You know, a 25% gain in the stock market is substantial. You know, that's a big rise. The question is are we looking at a bubble? There are a number of ways to go ahead and take a look at all these kinds of things. And one of the more well-known is a gentleman by the name of Shiller. You may be familiar with him. He's a Yale professor who wrote the book Irrational Exuberance. I think that's what it was called, right? Irrational. It was what's the old Fed?
Well, I know Steve Shiller. I used to play baseball with him, but I don't think it's the same guy.
No, it's going to be a different guy. And anyway, he wrote the book Irrational Exuberance. He predicted the decline of the internet bubble. So that brought him some notoriety. Well, you know, like all professors, like anybody who's a math guy, he's come out with and he's had actually for a number of years. I don't want to say he's just come out. He's had this in play, and it's one of those things that's tracked, a method of going ahead and calculating, whether or not we are in a, an expansive bubble. And try to be able to, as a means of trying to be able to kind of avoid these circumstances. But a lot of what it looks at is the 10 years profit. Okay. So, but if we take a look at the past 10 years profit, I mean, you go back 10 years, it's what, 2013, you go back to 2003.
Yes. I know the answer to this one. It's 2003.
I'm sorry. You forgot to phrase it in the form of a question. But since 2003 to 2013, what have we seen in the marketplace? I mean, really, this has almost been as bad as the 70s. You think about it. I mean, we haven't seen substantial earnings you know, over the past 10 years, you throw in the 2007-2008 environment, and that really just knocked everything to a hat. I mean, you try to think of average out earnings over that period of time, and the problem is that you're significantly skewed. So that's the contrarian argument. The argument that says, hey, look, we've got still a ways to go here, is that, well, earnings are based on a 10-year history. Okay, maybe earnings are, getting a little high price to earnings wise. Maybe the prices are inflated. But if we take a look at more normal environment, you know, earnings generally are a little higher. We should expect higher earnings.
Well, Goldman Sachs, you talked about they're predicting 6%. Now they're pretty good. I would, you know, as ratings go, I'd put them right up there with OV Capital. But that 6%, now some of that is, you know, I think they're probably looking at quantitative tapering, possibly heading into quantitative easing to, you know, as part of the reason that would come down. But how much of that, in your opinion, is some of that have to do with the fact that the market is just expensive? Now, like, look at the Dow touching 16,000. Is it simply overbought?
Well, that's the question we have to go ahead and take a look at. Overbought is a relative term. And when we take a look at pricing, okay, so we look at the value of the market. Yes, we are substantially higher. We have reached new highs. We've gone ahead and broken through old highs, and now we sit at or near all-time highs. And so from that perspective, yes, the market is expensive. But when we take a look at the relative value, that is to say the value of the market with regard to the earnings of companies in the marketplace. In that area, we're not looking necessarily at an expensive market. Again, I mean, a lot of this is based upon forward-looking earnings. And those earnings, forward-looking earnings, suggest that we still have room to go ahead and move. When we take a look at the psychology of the marketplace, you know, when you're talking about an overbought environment, really what you're looking at is, you know, what does the psychology of the market favor? In a circumstance like in 2007, we saw a relative strength of the market was significantly lower, which led us to believe that fixed income or cash was an environment that was more favored than equities. Okay, so what you're talking about essentially is an overbought circumstance is when we see equity prices rise substantially to the point that those people who want equities significantly are fewer than the people who actually already own them. In other words, if you think about the number of lollipops in a jar, okay, and everybody wants a lollipop, but all of a sudden everybody's got a lollipop. How many more lollipops are there out to buy? Okay, if everybody already has a lollipop, even though you got a dozen more lollipops in a jar, they're not worth as much. Okay, if however you only have three lollipops, you got 10 kids. Well, then you have an undervalued marketplace. So this is when you get into overbought, oversold. Most of this is from a technical analysis environment. Currently, we sit in an environment where equities are favored. That's just the cement. That's the psychology of the marketplace.
So there's more lollipops than there are suckers.
Well, actually, what we're looking at is a circumstance where people still want lollipops. Okay? That's it. So as long as people still want lollipops and the marketplace is a lollipop, man, do you think we can extend this any farther?
I would really rather not. Well, we still have some credibility left. Let's, now what you were saying, the upshot of all of this is, the point you're making is that, Microsoft can be cheaper at 40 than it is at 35 simply because the earnings are better.
Certainly. And just like that, the market can be just as cheap at an all-time high as it was when it was, you know, at a lower value, simply
so
because.
You feel there's more top side to it then?
Look, I'm not going to go ahead and say that we're going to expect a 25% increase next year, okay? I don't. In particular, there are a number of things that make me feel like there's room for caution. Manufacturing index. We talked about this last week. Okay. We came in at 19.8 on the index in October. We dropped off to 6.5 in November. Okay. That's a substantial decline, particularly when the expectation was decline only down to 15. We wrote about this beforehand in our article when we're taking a look at the idea that manufacturers seem to be reining in. It could be a circumstance where manufacturers do not expect that we're going to see significant consumer purchasing out there in the marketplace. And that could be as a confluence of both increase in healthcare premiums, the uncertainty that's come with the Affordable Care Act, the idea that the unemployment rate is still fairly high, and the
midterm elections.
Yeah, well, and the question of where are rates going, and particularly what's happening with tapering. All of this lends to some uncertainty that allows us to really kind of still be cautious, even though we do have upside potential.
Well, we're going to get into some of the things that we're interested in here at OV Capital that you might be as well when we come back for our final segment today. We are, again, let us wish you a happy Thanksgiving, by the way, because this will probably be rebroadcast next Thursday, and that will be appropriate then. But we'll be back on the other side of the break. We're going to take 60 seconds and come back with our last segment. You're listening to Money at Work on TalkZone.com.
You're listening to Money at Work on TalkZone.com. Back to Steve Memory and Brian Bourdon.
Thank you, and welcome back to this final segment of Money at Work here on TalkZone.com for Thursday, November 21st, 2013. Steve, before we went to break, I promised we were going to talk about some of the things that we like, that we're interested in, but you were really hitting, some good points regarding what was going to happen in 2014 in your estimate, not so much predictions as what could be happening that would influence what anybody's predictions might be, including Goldman Sachs. So why don't you take up with that? We've been talking about quantitative easing, midterm elections, things like that. What do you see in the offing for 2014 that might have an effect on market and market returns?
Okay, absolutely. We actually wrote an article in our local newspaper here called The Zebra. We'll give them a plug. They cover Alexandria and Arlington, Virginia. And we write the money article. And one of the things we got into talking about was, given what we saw as potentials out there, we looked at almost the perfect storm effect, if you will. Now, I don't want to oversell it because it's probably not that big, we're not talking here a 2007, 2008 type of event, but we are talking a situation where we could see a significant pullback. And for those of you who know us, we like pullbacks because it gives us a chance to go ahead and really take advantage of the market and find good value. But what we're facing is a circumstance where the market has a few things coming at it all at once. We are right in the middle of that high season. The holiday season for the United States here is oftentimes where a lot of companies will go ahead and make their numbers for the year. We see the consumer at its most active, so that's why everybody pays all this attention to, hey, how are things coming out in Black Friday, Black Monday, Black every other day. With the internet now, I don't even think it matters what day we're talking about. But the consumer, it really kind of drives a lot of things at this point. So the question is what's happening out there? And that's why I say we really need to kind of pay attention to some of these indexes. In particular, producers. If the producers are looking out there and the demand that they're seeing isn't significant, that could translate into weaker than expected earnings. And weaker than expected earnings means that all of a sudden these companies that were adequately valued or maybe even a little cheap now become more expensive. If the earnings we're getting when we buy a company are not there, we're likely to go ahead and see a circumstance where the prices have to drop to make the valuations normal. Okay? So that's one thing. The second was an environment where we're looking at healthcare. Okay. Now there's two sides to the healthcare argument. One is this, and these are both extreme examples. So let's just go ahead and let's take a look at two of the three forks in the road. I'll just explain that by saying the middle fork says everything is going to be normal and this won't have an impact at all. Okay. Well, I'm not sure I buy that one. So there are two other options. One, we see significant cancellations, which we have seen. We've seen a circumstance where there are higher premiums, in many cases premiums that are doubling for insurance. A mandate that says all of this has to be in place by the time January rolls around, which means people are paying attention to it in the December holiday season. The people who are getting the most significant increases in their health care are usually those healthier, younger folks. Incidentally, these healthier, younger folks oftentimes are healthier, younger married people with kids. You know, there may be utilization because of having children, or they're planning on getting pregnant, planning on having children, and therefore need to go ahead and take advantage of healthcare services. So they're in a circumstance where they can't just go ahead and allow their coverage to lapse. They must pick up coverage. But if you're facing a circumstance where you're a younger individual, which means that you're not as advanced in your occupation, you haven't had enough time to necessarily go ahead and put aside significant savings. You may be paycheck earners. You're moving from paycheck to paycheck. Now let's say your premium's gone from $200 a month for your family now up to $400. That's a substantial increase. And what we're talking about is essentially $2,400 less in your pocket. That means that we're going to have to make some decisions. The other alternative is that things move the opposite direction. Hey, you know what? You're young. You're healthy. You don't need to access healthcare. We can go ahead and we can actually dump the healthcare and not worry about it. Why? Because if you get sick, you're guaranteed to go ahead and be able to get coverage anyway. Now all of a sudden that $200 a month you were spending, you're going ahead and you're sticking it in your pocket, or maybe you're spending it someplace.
Or investing it. So at any rate, it's going back into the market now instead of just going to pay premiums.
Yeah, certainly. I think that the first of those options is by far the more likely.
Probably, yeah, they're going to keep it, and folks are going to keep it.
No, I mean, the circumstance where people go ahead and end up cutting back on expenses simply because they have to go ahead and pay for health care insurance.
Well, that'll be step one, but not everybody's going to be able to do that.
Right.
As we get into the last couple of minutes here, I wanted to ask you, I talk to investors, we talk to them all the time, particularly odd lot investors. They always want to buy. What's out there that I can buy? You know, and my answer is, well, why don't you give us your account and then I'll do it, because technically we're supposed to be paid for this. But I guess my question to you is, because when you tell me, you know what, you should be selling this, or it's like you're asking them to sell one of their children. But what do you like now? I mean, is there something out there now that you'd recommend that you think is a good buy that's not called Facebook, LinkedIn, something like that?
Sure. Look, I'll tell you, and going forward, let's say that we do see that 6% type of gain that Goldman is talking about, or or the 587 basis points that the Fed model's talking about. That means the dividends are going to be all the more important. That means we need to go ahead and pay attention to total return. And one of the companies that has been in the news recently, actually, you take a look out there, and the first thing that you see is the big settlement by J.P. Morgan. Now, we do own J.P. Morgan. We've owned them for quite a while, and we have bought them.
March 17th, 2008.
Exactly. But J.P. Morgan's still a decent buy. Many people have buy targets out there. Some, we're not exactly pounding the table on it at this point, but look, the yield you're getting out of J.P. Morgan is about 2.71% to 2.7% in that range, depending upon what the price is. We're sitting in the $57 share price range. We expect, based upon a couple of things, which we probably don't have time to get in right now, but we're looking at probably at about 68 or so a price. That's where our target is. I know some people have a higher price target, about 71. At 68, we are right at the edge of what we like to go ahead and see for a return. We're looking at about a 19% or so rate of return on that particular issue. Does that mean that we're going to get 19%? Are we always looking for 20% rates of return? No, but this means that we have a decent rate of return for the amount of risk that we're going ahead and taking.
So you feel like it's a good entry point here?
I think it's a decent core holding, and I think this is a decent entry point. I wouldn't want to go ahead and wait till it runs up farther. From a technical standpoint, we just went ahead and broke double tops. We have decent support, so we're seeing good things on the technical side. Again, we're not talking barn burner here. We're not talking three out of five. You know, it's a good quality holding, particularly on the financial side. Now that we've gone ahead and gotten this settlement pretty much out of the way, I think that leaves us a lot of room for going ahead and focusing on the core competency. So,
great.
Yeah.
So now, this is a question I wanted to ask you before. You know, we get into GLD, things like that when we're looking at picking up gold. I had a question from someone looking at an email that if they want to buy the precious metal, like a broker can get that for you. But I've heard you say this in the past, that if you're going to deal in commodities at all, you need to deal with someone who deals in not only commodities, but a specific commodity. I'm talking about ingots here, owning the metal, and what should they do with it if they obtain it?
Look, there are a couple of different ways of going ahead and owning gold. There are a number of different exchange-traded funds that are out there. I believe it was Merrill Lynch, back before they were Bank of America Merrill Lynch, came out with the first gold holders, and that's what trades under the symbol GLD. Which is still a decent way of going ahead and owning gold on paper. If you want the physical asset, well, there's only a couple of ways to go ahead and do that. One is you can go to a mint, and most places out there will either they have their own mint strikings. You can buy the numismatic coins like the Krugerrands or U.S. dollars that have a numismatic as well as an intrinsic value. But if you're looking to go ahead and make a gold play, you know, and you want to trade gold just like you wouldn't want to trade in any other commodity future, that you need to have, you can't do that yourself. You got to get get someone with expertise in that particular area. That's not something we do, but that's something we would recommend, that you talk to a commodities dealer, somebody who's had a long and storied, if you will, tenure.
That's what I wanted you to get to, because we're up against the break for this week.
Okay.
We'll see you in 2 weeks live. Meantime, thank you for joining us today for this version of Happy Thanksgiving. Money at Work, TalkZone.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks.